Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm in Margaret River, and I'm joined by Chef Jason Best, who was in episode 7, so you can listen to his whole episode where he talks about all of his F1 experience working as chef for the Mercedes Formula One team. So welcome back to the show, Jason.
It's Di, great to be on.
And Jason's co-hosting today, so we're here to talk about, well, we've just had the very stressful São Paulo Grand Prix in Brazil, which was a sprint weekend. There's a lot of watching for the sprint weekend. Awful time zone for us in Western Australia, having to either get up in the middle of the night or, as I did, just roll out of bed really early in the morning and watch the replay without touching my phone.
That's what I did as well.
Well, let's start with the sprint. Not a great result for our homegrown boy, Oscar Piastri.
No, it's been a rough couple of weeks for him. It looked like they were saying potentially some water had come across the track right as he had split off, because there was a few other cars straight afterwards that had the same issue, which was interesting.
Yeah, that's right. So we had, so on the rails, the gutter of the track, if you like, there's some grooves in there. And because of the rain before the sprint weekend, some water had pooled in those grooves. And then Norris, who was leading the sprint weekend, so Norris qualified on pole for the sprint. He won the sprint. But when he was going around, he kicked up some water. Kimi Antonelli, youngster 19-year-old, in second place, qualified on the front row and finished in second place, saw that water getting kicked up from Norris. And then Oscar Piastri happened to do the same thing, but because of the top of that gutter and that section of the track on the edge there was wet, yeah, it just caused not just Piastri to spin and hit the wall and end his sprint race. There were two others, weren't there? And we had Hülkenberg out as well of the sprint race and Colapinto. So same thing, touch the water, touch the side of the track there, and yeah, just one after the other, bang, bang, bang into the wall, and it was all over. So no points for Oscar in the sprint race. Lando Norris won the sprint race. Kimi Antonelli finished second. That was brilliant by the young 19-year-old in Mercedes, and his teammate George Russell in third, Max Verstappen in fourth, Charles Leclerc in fifth. Fernando Alonso, awesome result for him, in sixth in the sprint. Lewis Hamilton seventh, Pierre Gasly eighth. Lance Stroll in the top 10, in ninth in the other Aston Martin, and Isaac Hadjar in 10th. So that's the top 10 for the sprint. It was hard to watch, given Oscar had crashed out of that. What did you make of it?
He's just had a bit of bad luck, and seems to just stay with you, doesn't it, when things aren't going your way? Yeah, he just needs one good race to give him to get going again, but time's running out.
Time is running out, yeah. And it was an awful weekend, really, for Oscar. Really strong weekend for Lando. Kind of pains me to say. We are cheering for Oscar here in Australia, but credit where credit's due. Lando had a stonking weekend. Like, he really didn't put a foot wrong or a wheel.
He has gone up another, he's drawn up another gear to last month, hasn't he?
So he's, yeah, just, he sure has, you know, blocking out social media and doing whatever he's doing. He's really channeling the Formula One gods, who are liking how he's paying homage to them and granting him every single wish he wants by the looks of things.
Would you say it's been since they had their break, the European break? Do you reckon it's...
No. Oscar's been going downhill since that awful call in Monza. I don't know if that has just set something off mentally with Oscar, but since Monza, I feel like something's changed. Perhaps, that's hard to say.
You only had that bad luck in the sprint, and then what happened in the race?
So since Monza, Oscar's had a DNF, a P4 in Austin, a DNF in the sprint, then P5, then Mexico P5, then in the sprint, he had a DNF in Brazil, and he finished the race P5. You know, and Lando has just been capitalising on all of this and scoring a bag of points.
No, he's just got another gear. He hasn't put a foot wrong. He's got That's where he is now, isn't he? He's dominating.
Yeah, he is dominating. It feels like all the momentum is with Lando. I can still see Oscar fighting. Well, let's talk about the race. Okay, so the main race in Brazil. So qualifying in the main event, Lando qualified on pole. Kimi Antonelli was second, Charles Leclerc in third, and Oscar Piastri in fourth. And there was like nothing really separating them. Between Oscar and Lando, there was less than 4 tenths.
From what I saw in qualifying, Piastri was really good in the first and last sector, but his middle sector, he was losing a bit of speed. But he was right up there.
Yeah.
But Norris and Antonelli's last laps were very quick.
Yeah, the Mercedes were doing really well at the San Paolo track. They were showing a lot of speed, as were the Racing Bulls, which was kind of random.
And Leclerc had a good last lap as well, qualifying.
Yes, this is true. Leclerc did have a great last lap. After Oscar qualifying in fourth, there was Isaac Hadjar, who qualified in fifth, which is a fantastic result for him. George Russell in sixth, Liam Lawson in seventh, and the other Racing Bulls. Ollie Bearman qualified in eighth, another great result for that small team for Haas. Pierre Gasly in the Alpine in ninth, and Nico Hülkenberg in the Sauber round out the top 10 for quali, which is, a really mixed and unusual, qualifying.
Yeah, no Max, the top five, which was interesting.
Yeah, so he was complaining heaps about the car during qualifying, that the car was bouncing heaps, that it was undrivable again. So Max actually qualified in 16th, and then they ended up working on the car during Parc Fermé. I think they swapped out an engine and worked on the suspension.
He had an engine change, didn't he? So they started him from the pit lane for the race.
So behind him was Esteban Ocon in the pits. So Max was essentially starting in 19th, but from the pit lane.
Yeah.
And then the race, it was all dry conditions, which was kind of a miracle because they were predicting a cyclone on Saturday to hit the racetrack during the action, which never eventuated, thankfully.
I read that on Friday night that it was brewing, and I was like, well, maybe there won't be a race to talk about on Monday.
Yeah, which was another reason why I didn't get up to watch anything live, was because I thought, oh, if it's going to be rain delay, that'll kill me.
Safety car race.
Yeah, exactly. So in the race, yes, Lando got a great start. Kimi Antonelli hung on to second, and then Max, my God, Max did 12 overtakes during the race. So from starting in 19th, essentially, he ended up on the podium in third. And he had 3 pit stops. Like one of them, yes, was under a safety car, and he had a puncture.
It's always a great track for the watching overtaking, and there's a lot more action in Brazil, I reckon, compared to a few of the other tracks. It is great.
Yeah, it really did deliver on the action front, Brazil, for sure. So Max finished on the podium in third. There was George in fourth. Oscar finished fifth, which we'll talk about. Ollie Bearman in sixth. Liam Lawson in seventh. Isaac Hadjar in eighth. Nico Hülkenberg in ninth. And Pierre Gasly finished in 10th. So that's rounding out the top 10. So some notable people missing in that top 10 are the two Ferraris, both of them DNF'd. Yeah. First, let's talk about Charles Leclerc. Tell us what happened, Jason.
Innocent bystander.
He was an innocent bystander. So after the hometown hero, Gabriel Bortoleto, my cousin, 1T, not 2, got tapped on the first lap of the race from Lance Stroll and went out, hit the wall. The race was over for Gabriel Bortoleto. Absolutely heartbroken for him.
He was born in Sao Paulo.
Right. So this is where he's from. So all his family and friends were there for his first home race.
That sucks.
Yeah, really awful for him. And it often happens, though, with drivers at their first home race. They just end up having a shocker, and sometimes through no fault of their own. With the hometown hero, he was out. So after Gabriel Bortoleto was out, the virtual safety, the safety car came out.
If he was virtual, and then they had the normal restart, and Norris was quite, he takes his time to go on those restarts. He did one of those again.
So when Norris actually got going on the restart, they reckon Kimi Antonelli, who was in second place, was caught napping, so to speak.
Mm.
So you had Kimi Antonelli in the middle, Charles Leclerc on the outside, Oscar Piastri took a lunge on the inside, and then Kimi kind of, there was three across, three abreast, and then Kimi kind of cut the corner a little bit. Oscar had nowhere to go, could see Kimi coming across, hit the brakes, locked up, hit Kimi. Well, Kimi kind of drove in, hit Kimi. Kimi bounced across, hit Charles Leclerc, and Charles was out of the race. So that was just no fault of Ferrari at all. And that just ended, Charles Leclerc's race, which is pretty awful.
Yeah, exactly. I guess they looked at the lockup on Piastri, the investigation, and that's why they pinned him at the time penalty. But to me, it looked like he actually had a line, and Antonelli kind of crept in on that a little bit, and I feel like I feel like it's more of a racing incident, but I feel like Antonelli was very lucky not to get penalised anything as well. It was one of those ones.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like they both could have been penalised or both not.
Yeah, so Antonelli was lucky. He got away with no damage and no penalty. The stewards gave Oscar a 10-second penalty, which he had to serve in his pit stop. It was really unfortunate, but
it cost him second or third place, didn't it? So.
Well, he would have finished second if you add 10 seconds onto Oscar's time, he would have finished in second place with everything else staying the same. Yeah, in hindsight, it's always a beautiful thing, isn't it? You can look back at replays, looking back slowly. The interesting thing is that this time, for the first time in the history of Australia, we had a choice of which commentary we wanted to listen to for the race on KO Sports. So normally we get the Sky Sports feed, which I've complained about heaps over and over about the British bias. But this time we were able to get the F1 TV feed as well. All they showed was the immediate race. There was no lead-up stuff from F1 TV, no post-race interviews from F1 TV besides the podium interviews. So I tuned into that for the first time, and it was really interesting to hear Jolyon Palmer, who said as soon as that incident happened that he thought Oscar was hard done by with that 10-second penalty, whereas on Sky Sports, which I watched that also, I mean, you watched Sky Sports, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and they were saying the steward's going to take a long, hard look at that and Oscar's probably going to end up with a penalty. So they thought, well, it's a penalty to Oscar straight away, whereas Jolyon Palmer on F1 TV was like, I think Oscar's been hard done by there. In hindsight, looking back, I think Oscar was hard done by because he didn't lose control of the car, but he did lock up. Mm. And what do you do now? It's too late.
I wonder whether if there was no smoke that came out of the wheels, would they have looked at it differently or something? It's interesting. What's even more interesting is that Leclerc even came out afterwards and said that he shouldn't have been entirely to blame. So that
exactly.
And he was the one that was forced out of the race.
Yeah, but look, I don't think there's going to be anything done about it now post-race. That was really interesting for Charles to say in the post-race interview. He's the one who had the biggest consequence of that. His race was over, and even said in the interviews that, you know, Oscar was not totally to blame. Kimi went across. Kimi would have known that at a restart he saw that Oscar was there, that there was someone on the inside. Yeah.
More bad luck for Oscar, as we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, more bad luck for Oscar. And there was some bad luck for Hamilton as well, who also had a DNF. So two Ferrari, double DNF for Ferrari. Lewis had, what happened to Lewis?
He had his front wing replaced, didn't he? I think there was too much damage to the car. Put him back out for a bit, but I think he was over it from what I gathered.
Yeah. That's right. They were saying that there was some floor damage, I believe, after there was a hit between Hamilton and Colapinto early in the race, and that resulted in Hamilton's front wing. Like you said, double DNF for Ferrari, homeboy hero out of the race, Oscar Piastri, 10-second time penalty. The F1 gods were not smiling on everyone I support.
Most interesting thing I thought is that Verstappen's race compared to his qualifying was polar opposite.
Exactly.
They obviously got things right overnight before the race. Cause that's incredible to finish third from where he was.
And it was only just third.
He was very close to second in the end.
He was right. Like he finished, just over 0.3 of a second behind Kimi Antonelli. Like, if there were another couple of laps in it, I'm not sure Kimi Antonelli would have held him off. You know, this is what he did last year, right? He started in 17th and won the race. This year he started in 19th and finished third.
They got their, nailed their strategy as well, the team. So
yeah, they did. Yeah, they did nail the strategy, and he was just on a charge. And when Max is on a charge, not much stops him.
Because imagine what he was thinking after qualifying with Hadjar and Lawson in the junior Red Bull team, finishing faster than him in qualifying.
Yeah, by a mile as well. Yeah.
What's going on here?
Yeah, exactly. Because in qualifying, it was Hadjar 5th and Lawson 7th. Max Verstappen qualified 16th. His teammate, Yuki Tsunoda, was out in Q1. He qualified 19th.
I'm surprised. He won't be Red Bull next year, will he, Tsunoda?
I think Yuki will probably lose his seat.
Yeah, that's been interesting to watch, because Verstappen's been pretty solid again, and that second Red Bull car hasn't seemed to perform for a while.
It's the cursed seat, right? Everyone was saying last year that Sergio Perez was, you know, not performing, not up to scratch, that Max Verstappen was beating him by way too much. And everyone else who's been in that seat since then, which has been Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda, both of them have really struggled in that second Red Bull. So whoever gets that seat next, and it's looking like it'll probably be Isaac Hadjar. Oh, I kind of don't even want Isaac Hadjar to go there, because he's doing really well in his rookie season at Racing Bulls. Being promoted to that cursed seat might just end his Formula One career. Or he might step up. You just don't know, I suppose, you know.
He's not going to say no to that.
I don't think he'd get a choice.
No, for sure. Another good result for Bearman.
Yeah, Ollie Bearman. He did great, didn't he? He's another one who's got some good momentum. The F1 God's smiling on him. It's so good seeing these rookies do well. So in the top 10, let's just have a look. Well, if we count Liam Lawson as a rookie, we've got Isaac, Liam, Ollie and Kimi. So four rookies in the top 10. So 40% of the top 10 are rookies, which is pretty amazing.
But it's good for Formula One. This is sport.
Yeah, it is good for the sport. Yeah. And finishing sixth, yeah, brilliant result for Ollie Bearman. His teammate, so his point of reference, Esteban Ocon, didn't have a great race. He finished in 12th. Didn't really see or hear much about Ocon during the broadcast. I don't really know how his race went.
Alonso was pretty quiet too.
He was quiet. And Alonso finished in 14th.
What was interesting that from 6th place to like 12th was all very close. All the cars, did you see that, how they all finished? Yeah. They're all really close together.
Yeah, it was like a big DRS train, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, of the 71 lap race, there were 69 overtakes in total. 12 of those went to Max Verstappen. 8 overtakes each to Ollie Bearman and Alex Albon in the Williams. Another really quiet team over the whole weekend was Williams. They didn't finish in the points. Alex Albon finished 11th, Carlos Sainz in 13th. 6 overtakes to Antonelli, 5 overtakes to Carlos Sainz, and 4 overtakes each to Piastri, Russell, Hadjar and Hülkenberg. Stacks, and there were more down the order. Lots of action on the track and a massive crowd there in Brazil as well, 304,000.
Yeah, and so they put a new 20,000 seat stand-in on turn one, I think.
Okay.
It was, but the punters would have been happy. They're pretty mad about it over there. It's actually a pretty cool track, because it's on almost like on a hill. Mm-hmm. And I remember standing out there and just being able to look, and you can see different parts of the race. It was one of the better ones to walk out the back of the kitchen and have a look at.
Oh, great. So obviously you went to São Paulo when you were working for the Mercedes Formula One team. Like, did you get a chance to have a look around the city or do anything while you were there?
Yeah, we went out a few times. You have to be pretty careful there. When we left the hotel to go to the race, we wouldn't wear our uniforms because teams were targeted. So we just tried to blend in until you got to the track. But we did go out to a few restaurants. Food was always really good. They love their steaks over there. A lot of stuff coming out on big skewers, and you're carving it off yourself and that sort of vibe. But, you know, nice salsas, chimichurris and stuff like that. You always got plenty of food there. I remember it being the hardest kitchen to cook in.
Why is that?
Very small. And there was, I guess, that tropical kind of climate. And there was not much air flow because the kitchen was in the back of the little hospitality that we had. But we managed to make some more air flow with a polystyrene box that we attached to the little vent and put the stove underneath that to form some sort of extraction, which helped. And we drew a big Mercedes symbol on it. So that was pretty cool. But it was a good race to be at for sure. Yeah, just hard cooking at it. That was all.
Yeah. Well, Brazil as a country is, and I know this Grand Prix is the São Paulo Grand Prix. They're very adamant that that's how this Grand Prix is referred to as opposed to the Brazilian Grand Prix. I think obviously the city of São Paulo is putting in all the money for this, or the majority of the money. I'm not really sure. But Brazil as a country is a awesome country to travel around. When I went, the first time I went, I had been in South America on the other side, like in, I went to the Galapagos Islands, went to Peru, Machu Picchu, Bolivia.
Yeah.
And it was fabulous. And to the Amazon jungle on the Peruvian side of the Amazon jungle, as opposed to the Brazilian side, I couldn't wait to get over the other side of South America because I was so sick of eating chicken and rice in Peru and Bolivia. chicken and rice. The variety of cuisine just really wasn't there if you're on a budget, which I was at the time. Having said that, one of the meals of my life was in Lima in Peru. It was at a fantastic restaurant called Astrid and Gaston. I still remember that. The waiters had white gloves on, and after dessert, a little box came out with these little drawers that you pulled out, and they had like little chocolate truffles and little chocolates in each of the drawers. It was very fancy pants and very, for Peruvian standards, really expensive. But on the Australian dollar at the time, it was very reasonable. But Brazil, it felt more European, which I was really missing after, you know, nearly 3 months on the other side of South America. I went to the Iguazu Falls, just magnificent waterfalls. And what I loved about it was that it really felt, you really felt like you were in nature. Whereas I don't know if you've been to Niagara Falls.
No, I haven't been to Niagara Falls, no.
Well, when I went to Niagara Falls, I went in on the American side because that borders Canada, of course. I went in on the American side and you kind of walk through this big concrete tourist building, I guess, and you walk out the other side and you're kind of there. And I was like, oh, I thought I'd have to go on a little trek or be surrounded by trees or something.
Yeah.
It just felt like a very kind of strange experience. But the Iguazu Falls were that kind of experience. It was, that was a real highlight of Brazil, as was, I really liked this little town I stayed in, Itacari. It was on the beach. It was really surfy, laid back. Like, I think Brazilians and Australians have a lot of similar sensibilities. Like, we're just pretty relaxed. I don't know if it's a coastal beach lifestyle, but
there's plenty of South American community down this way in Margarita and area, isn't there? So there's something to that. Yeah, for sure. If I had my time again, I'd definitely go and check out one of Alex Atala's restaurants in Brazil.
Yes, me too.
Mm. I didn't really know about him until after I got back. We did a gourmet escape event with him, but he was brilliant. He's just a nice guy and great chef.
Yeah, definitely. I've been to Brazil twice. One was for the FIFA World Cup and the other one was, it was amazing. And the other one was, it was just traveling through Brazil and had a month in Brazil, which was fantastic, but didn't spend any time in São Paulo, only transited through the airport there. It's not really a city that draws tourism. Like, there's not.
Nah.
It's
full on.
There's not an impressive waterfalls like the Iguazu Falls, or it doesn't have the beaches of Rio de Janeiro. So it doesn't really have that same tourist appeal. But one thing I do find interesting about São Paulo is that apparently there's like loads of different helicopters in the sky, because getting anywhere in the city, the population of São Paulo is 22.99 million, 23 million people in one city. I mean, that's nearly the population of Australia. Wowzers.
Yeah.
you're just in gridlock the whole time. So people with money travel by helicopter from building rooftop to building rooftop.
Makes sense. But yeah, I can remember being in the car. It always took ages to get from the hotel to the track. We weren't going that far. It took ages. It is a very busy city.
Yeah,
it's full on. And because of that, I think about Freeway, it doesn't have as much touristy appeal probably because it's a big, busy place.
It is a big, busy place. But interestingly, the track is located between two lakes, right? That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Interlagos. And it seems to have its own little microclimate, which is why the weather is such a big factor usually in this race. It didn't play out this year so much, just a bit of rain before the sprint.
Did the storm end up hitting after the race or anything, do you know, or did it just went past and missed it?
I don't know what happened to the predicted cyclone, but that was talked about a lot on the Friday and then didn't happen and just wasn't talked about again. As a Oscar Piastri fan, I feel deflated after this weekend. I felt really deflated after the sprint and qualifying even, just with Lando on pole, like his main rival for the World Drivers' Championship. And yeah, I don't know. How are you feeling about it all?
Like we've said, it's bad luck. But I was wondering what your thoughts were on the whole people were saying there's a bit of a conspiracy theory. Maybe they're favouring Norris for a while. Is that because they're British, McLaren's British and he's British? Is that that sort of vibe?
Well,
I'm sure.
I mean, yeah, those rumours have been swirling for ages, haven't they? And, you know, if you look on paper, they have been favouring Lando. Like, a lot of the papaya rules of trying to keep things fair have fallen in Lando's favour. And then I listened back to an old podcast during the week, one from a few years ago. I think it was called the High Performance Podcast, with an interview with Mark Webber, where Mark was talking about his time in Red Bull and how Red Bull were favouring Sebastian Vettel to win the 2010 championship, to the point where the engineers were turning down Webber's car, the top speed that he could only reach at a certain speed, because the engineers would be turning down the car on the computers. And that thought did cross my mind with Oscar, because how are they in the same car? And how's Lando just on the pace? And Oscar, who's not forgotten how to drive, I don't know if someone famous said that during the week, he's not forgotten how to drive. And even when, you know, Oscar was in second place during the race after that virtual safety car restart, and that there was that incident where Kimi Antonelli knocked out Charles Leclerc, and Oscar was sitting in second and he was right up Lando's, like right behind him, 3/10.
Yeah, yeah.
5/10 behind him. And then the gap was just getting wider and wider and wider with every lap by the looks of it. How is Oscar losing 2/10, 3/10 and more every single lap behind Lando?
Yeah.
I would have thought that Oscar would have stayed right on his tail to try and have the opportunity to pass Lando.
I think so. They have to do it. Don't they have to get it done quick? Because the guys in front always have the clean air.
Yeah, there's that.
But I don't. Obviously, he's got DRS behind him, but if they don't use it, it's hard to stay really close in second for a long time. It's from what I can say. That's all I could think of. But I don't know. Don't know why. All of a sudden that gap got bigger and did he just go, okay, I'm not going to get past him. I don't know. It's his tape.
Yeah, it just looked like Oscar was losing time there behind Lando, and it was unfortunate. I mean, I don't want to believe any conspiracy theories. I think, honestly, the team would just be crazy to be jeopardising one driver in the hope of another when Max Verstappen is still a real threat. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I don't think so. Honestly, I think Norris has gone to another level, and I think Piastri just hasn't been able to go with him at the moment. But hopefully, I'm hoping there's nothing sinister there. And I think now, I think everything's going to be in Norris's favour now, though, that he's in front, I think he'll get all the run. They have those little rules. They tweet that now that, this is racing now, isn't it, between the two?
Yeah,
which is interesting. So the next race, for whatever reason, Piastri's winning the race and they stuff up the pit stop and Norris gets in front, Norris isn't going to give that back to Piastri.
No. I heard Zach Brown in an interview during the week saying that, yeah, it was just pure racing now between the two drivers and that McLaren would rather lose the drivers' championship to Max Verstappen and keep things fair between their two drivers rather than favour one driver over the other or call team orders on one driver over the other. And I thought that was really interesting. I don't know. Lando's been with the team for a really long time. You know, what's his seventh season? This is Oscar's third season. Lando's a McLaren protege. Oscar came through the Alpine route. One thing I wanted to say about the F1 TV feed, I found myself screaming at the TV because they kept showing the gaps between each driver and the leader, not the interval gaps between the driver and the one in front of them. I don't know if you noticed that I presume the graphics are all the same between the two feeds.
Yeah, I thought they were the same.
Yeah. But
the timings.
That was one of the frustrations that I found watching the race was like, stop showing the gap to the leader. I want to see the gap to the car in front, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But Brazil, like you said, it does deliver lots of action every year and it'll be on the calendar until 2030. So that's confirmed.
That's good. And it's at the right time of year too. That was good. I actually wish there were a few more tracks like that. I think it's a good old-fashioned track and it seems to get good old-fashioned racing too.
Yeah. Well, at least there's opportunities to overtake, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Brazil's dished out lots of firsts. Well, this time, first time that Kimi Antonelli finished in second place, his highest finish.
Career best for him?
Career best, exactly, for Kimi Antonelli. It was also the first podium for Gasly and Sainz in the past. So, yeah, last year, of course, it was the double podium for Alpine with Ocon and Gasly, which was just a really memorable moment in Formula One. It was the first win for Russell in 2022, Brazil. It was the first time that Lewis won the World Drivers' Championship in 2008. That was in Brazil. And it was the first time that Kevin Magnussen got pole position. That was also in Brazil.
Kevin Magnussen.
Yeah. And then last year, as we said, Max started from 17th on the grid and won the race last year in Brazil. Oh! Other big news. Oh, my God. How have I forgotten this? Charles Leclerc is off the market, officially engaged.
All right. That is big news, I guess.
Massive news. Yes, that's huge news in Formula One. Alexandra, I'm going to butcher her surname, Alexandra St. Maloux. They're beautiful posts on social media. And that was during the non-race week. Yeah, they got engaged and apparently her oval diamond ring is said to be valued at $525,000.
Wow. That's a bit more than my partner's engagement ring. But
it's about 50 times the value of my string, but I'm fine with that. It's all good.
I actually saw something that was interesting. I found interesting anyway, is that Nico Rosberg's partner, Vivian, just released for her kids' book.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Nice.
Well, I mean, he was promoting that during the work, trying to get people to support that. She's lovely. She was actually a genuine, nice person. The next race in Vegas, is that this weekend or is there a break?
No, we've got a break. So I've got a special guest episode next week. So stay tuned for that one. And I'll jump in now and say that the stats show that probably 10 times the amount of people watch this podcast and have subscribed. So if you're listening or watching this on YouTube, hello, please subscribe to our channel because it really does help our small podcast get seen. We've got a break next week, then Vegas, then we're off to Qatar, and then the final round, Abu Dhabi. So we've got three races left. Qatar is a sprint weekend. So there's still, 75 and 83 points on the table up for grabs. All right. Well, Jace, thank you very much for stepping in.
Thanks.
the co-host seat this week. Monique's decided to hang up the microphone. She's concentrating on pregnancy. I did get a message from Monique, who was in your seat up until recently during the race, to say that she actually has to switch the race off and can't listen to all the post-race sort of chatter because it just stresses her out too much and she's worried her blood pressure will go up. And the poor thing is, wow. I think she's 30. She must be 34 weeks pregnant now, so she's got to take it easy.
That's probably similar to me watching a Freo game. I'm much the same as that. I need to sometimes just switch off. That's why I quite enjoy watching other sports like Formula One. Now I can watch it relaxed, not stressed.
Oh, my God. No, I cannot watch it relaxed. I'm massively stressed during Formula One, just to the point where, like, because of the delayed time, you know, I watch the sprint race and then watch qualifying, like, back to back. And the sprint race, of course, Oscar crashed out, so that was just deflating and awful. And then qualifying, he was looking pretty good, but just ended up qualifying in fourth with Lando on pole. So that wasn't great as well. And after all that, I was like, oh man, I feel like I need a stronger, stiff drink or something.
have a beer at 6 o'clock in the morning to calm down.
Yeah. Well, everyone, thank you for tuning in. Thank you very much, Jason, for jumping in the seat this week.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolute pleasure. If you want to hear more from Jason, go check out episode 7. So he worked for the Mercedes Formula One team as a chef, traveled around to most of the races during his couple of years with them, and he's got some great stories there. So check that out. And if you haven't already, please subscribe, rate and review our podcast. It really does help. You can find us on all the social media platforms. We're on YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram and Facebook. You can email us at andawaywego f1podcast@gmail.com. Well, that's it. Until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto.
Let's do it.